County is a good example. They had a bad experience with Jenny Mae bonds and lost $13 million. The coverage for the county was $5 million, but that coverage provided for cost of defense deductions. A bunch of lawyers, some of whom were not too familiar with the tort system, fooled around with this for 2 or 3 years. I ultimately represented the treasurer. It became obvious it should be settled. By that time, over $90,000 had been used in cost of defense. Marion County recovered $3.2 million of the original $5 million policy because of the cost of defense clause. Those are the two examples that are most readily available. Forgetting the practical aspects of it, number one, it creates a conflict between the defense lawyer and his insured, because the more dollars that the defense lawyer spends, the less protection his insured client has. And any conscientious defense lawyer will tell you that's a real problem. It also has been done in one other area, and that is under the FARS PLF insurance. We're self-insured. They have a deduction for cost of defense. Notwithstanding, I'm a member of the bar and was one of the people, president of the bar, who put that system into effect. I oppose that. The bar should not charge away from the bar coverage for lawyers the cost of defending that lawyer. It encourages defenses that shouldn't be made. It's beyond human temptation not to go to court and spend some money, even if you're in good conscience trying to find out what you really owe. Those to the committee are my reasonings and my reasons for supporting this bill. Even though it will have limited impact on most of our citizens, at least as far as automobile coverage is concerned.
Madam Chair.
Representative Edmondson.
Let me see if I've got this straight. If the defense costs equal or exceed the insurance coverage, say equal it,
you'd have no coverage.
There would, and then a judgment is returned against the defendant. The defendant just has to pay it out of their pocket as if they had no insurance.
That's true.
What if the defense costs exceed the amount of the coverage?
I can't imagine that ever happening because the defendant knows how much the coverage is.
Okay.
You know how deep the well is, and when you hit the bottom, you quit.
Good answer. Thank you.
Representative Minnis.
Isn't it possible now, in this existing statute tends to deal with commercial liability insurance now, and the way it's amended would deal with every insurance policy or form.
I didn't want to mislead you. I say it most often in Oregon occurs there. It does occur in auto liabilities too. I had an interstate trucking company with an 800,000 policy who killed two women in an auto accident in Washington County. That insurance was written in Ohio, as I recall. It was a cost of defense policy. I had to be very careful to try to get that policy paid in before we spent a fortune in seeing whether or not we should go to court. So if an Oregon citizen is injured by a policy that's written out of the, and more generally written out of the state, I think the Cougars policy was written in Washington, for example. But in any event, that's how it impacts Oregon citizens.
Okay, but I guess what I'm getting at is that if you're a person buying one of these policies and you're made aware that the amount of coverage that you're purchasing also includes the cost of any defense, I guess I'm wondering whether or not a person's making a decision in buying that policy and understands and knows that those costs would be deducted and that they had to defend the policyholder in some kind of an action. I guess the bottom line is, are they making a choice to buy a policy that they know they're going to have to deduct those kind of costs should they be have to be defended? And also, if they want higher limits of their coverage, aren't those available already, and can't they purchase it?
Let me address both of those. The reason these policies are popular and have been sold is that they're cheaper. If I buy a $100,000 policy with a cost of defense deduction, the company knows it's going to pay the cost of defense anyway. It really is selling me that policy for about the same as an $80,000 policy, because they know the cost of defense will be in addition, you see. There's an incentive on the insured's part to buy it. But now let's address the second problem. You have bought a policy in your own good judgment for $100,000, and you've bought it cheaper, and you got a cost of defense deduction. Now you get in an auto accident where you're at fault, and you go to your company and you say, look, I ran over a couple of people and killed them. I'd like to have you settle. And the two people's estate say, we'll settle for $100,000. But your company says, why should we settle? Let's look into it, because you're paying the cost of looking into it. Now, when that happens, you have to go out and get your own lawyer to force your own company to settle. And that happens all the time. So what you've done as a consumer, as an insurance consumer, you've bought a pig in a poke. And when they won't settle and they say, it's on you, we don't care if we settle. We're only going to spend this much money, whether we give it to our lawyer or give it to you. Then your alternative is to go out and get your own lawyer to force your company to do something they should be doing.
Opens an interesting door. Do you have any access to data that would indicate how many times that happens in Oregon or has happened relevant to this?
I can tell you that in the last 5 years, I've handled 4 cases where it happened.
Where someone specifically had to go out and hire an outside attorney?
Where they had outside counsel representing them, that's right. In order to force the company to do something that they had to do.
Hey, let me ask a follow-up question. Is there a process by which a policyholder can recover those damages?
No.
If the insurance company failed to do something that they had a lawful responsibility?
You could have a bad faith claim if they didn't settle within the policy, but if you've signed an agreement to deduct the cost of defense and you've paid $25,000 to be sure you're really liable, there's not a chance in the world of you getting your money back.
Representative Clark.
Bert, doesn't the... I appreciate your comment about this perhaps spurring some increased litigation. But doesn't it cut the other way, too? Doesn't existing law work in such a way as to create an incentive to keep the litigation to a minimum? I'm a plaintiff's lawyer and you're a defense lawyer, and we both know that the cost of defense is coming out of the policy. You're doing your job, and I'm doing my job, ethical standpoint. Aren't we going to work to keep the litigation to a minimum and get the thing settled?
Well, let's address that. I certainly am from the plaintiff's point of view, but if you pay in the policy, I charge a fee based on the policy. But what incentive is there for you from the defense point of view? You're going to get paid either way you go.
That's why I said from an ethical standpoint.
And it's really tempting to spend a few thousand dollars at least looking into the claim, and maybe you should do that. I'm not saying they're unethical.
No, I understand. Thank you.
Other questions from subcommittee members? Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Bert.
You.
Wade.
Are you?
Thank you. Stumped me. Last witness of the day, and finally ended up stumped on a name. It's Quakendale?
Quakendale.
Quakendale. Good afternoon. Thank you for being so patient. I'm sure
it's
been a very interesting afternoon for you.
Yes, it has been interesting. And I'm thankful that we're getting this today so we didn't have to come back for it. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Wade Quakendale. I'm Vice President of the Surplus Lines Association of Oregon. The Surplus Lines Association of Oregon is established under ORS 735.430 and is the advisory organization to Surplus Lines licensees. Surplus Lines licensed agents are the access of Oregon business to insurance coverage written by companies which are not admitted to the state of Oregon under its licensing procedures, but which are eligible to transact insurance under the Oregon statutes. Our association opposes House Bill 2429 and urges you to table this legislation. We believe that its passage would adversely affect the insurance-buying citizens of Oregon. While at one time the insurance industry had considered liability policies in which defense costs were the part of the limit of coverage, competitive pressure kept that taking place in the majority of circumstances and for the majority of insureds. At this time, few policies are issued which include the cost of defense within the limit. Those classes of business which do have this policy form are in some of the areas of hazardous product liability, such as equipment manufacturers, chemical companies, pharmaceutical manufacturers. Other classes of business are directors and officers' liability, errors and omissions, professional liability. The underwriters of these classes of business require that they more closely define their ultimate exposure in terms of dollars. They do not feel that they can leave defense costs as an open-ended contract. To require underwriters to do that will mean that these underwriters simply will not provide coverage in Oregon for these classes of accounts. To give you an idea of the premium dollars involved, surplus lines premium in these two classes of business in 1988, professional liability, errors and omissions was $5,948,042. In professional medical liability, the premium for surplus lines carriers was $2,186,809. Now, those were the totals. It is not necessary to say that those totals were all for defense policies in which defense costs were part of the limit. A great deal of them were. Question has been asked, if defense costs are part of the limit of liability, how does an insured protect themselves? And the answer is simple, that the insured may purchase excess policies in layers to achieve a level of protection that insured may wish. The other question goes to the recovery by the plaintiff, and while a policy which provides defense in addition to the limits may leave more money for the plaintiff and the plaintiff's attorney, it will not do so if the coverage is not available because of restriction in the marketplace. You might say that the majority of these companies that write these coverages, directors and officers, the hazardous product and so on, are companies nationally, including underwriters at Lloyd's, internationally underwriters at Lloyd's, other European companies that do perform and provide insurance for Oregon insureds, and U.S. carriers that are located elsewhere but practice in Oregon through the surplus lines laws. There are probably somewhere in the area of 200 to 300 of these types of carriers that write insurance, and these carriers also write many other lines of business, not just these policies that provide liability insurance, which include these items. These are specialty companies. They provide coverage that the majority of the insurance carriers will not provide. If this type of insurance was readily available, many people would step up to it. But because there are very few carriers that wish to provide these types of insurance, we must do everything we can to protect that source. This measure will have no effect on the majority of insurance companies that operate in Oregon, as has been said. The standard forms for the standard business will continue to be available in the same manner. But to pass this law would cause, in our opinion, a withdrawal from the Oregon marketplace by those underwriters who feel that they must define their exposure in dollars against premium received. And we would urge you on that basis to reject this measure.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Clark.
What do other states do?
To my knowledge, Representative Clark, there is no state that has a restriction of this manner. These policies are sold on an international basis, including defense costs within the limit of liability.
Representative Baum.
My concern here is that the standard automobile insurance policy, the policy that applies to most Oregonians, their house liability policy. Existing law, right now, there's no clauses on any of those policies that allow insurance defense costs to be credited against the amount of insurance. Is that correct in Oregon?
That's correct.
And in order to do so, they have to go to the state insurance commissioner and find some justification that in the area more towards products liability, pharmaceuticals, to justify doing that for some reason. Is that right?
Essentially, what takes place on a practical standpoint is that the first issue that comes into play is the state requires certain financial responsibility minimum in order to be insured, and that does not, and you must write a policy that provides those minimums for automobile insurance, and it does not take into consideration cost of defense. From a practical standpoint, if a carrier wanted to come into the state and write a policy for automobile coverage in which defense was part of the limit of liability, they would have to write greater than the financial responsibility minimums that were available. From a practical standpoint, from a competitive basis, it isn't done. In my experience, and I've been in the insurance business 30-some years, have never seen an automobile policy that had defense costs as a part of the limit on an automobile policy. Have not seen. I don't say that one doesn't exist. It's possible. Highly improbable.
Follow-up, Representative Calhoun.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's any public policy reason that you could think of why we would include commercial policies but not consumer policies under the statute.
The statute is provided. It doesn't say personal or commercial policies. It says any policy issued with insurance. From a practical standpoint, personal policies simply do not have that in. The competitive structure is that defense costs are always in addition. That's the way the business is sold, that's the way it is filed, that's the way it's written in the personal lines business. What we are concerned with is that the real application of this is not in the individual consumer, it's going to be on the business client. It's going to be on boards of directors. But where they cannot buy directors and officers liability, because the great majority of underwriters that provide that coverage include defense costs as part of the limit. It's going to be affect people that provide for professional liability, errors and omissions, malpractice. Those policies are written by underwriters that define their limit, and they include in the limit whatever the cost of defense is. Those are the people who are going to find a restricted marketplace, because this the way this was written.
Since you got off on this, let's ask the question, how come they can't just have a reduced, assuming that the defense costs should be placed outside of their full amount, and assuming that you're just spreading the cost amongst everybody, which is the purpose of insurance, how come they can't just have a reduced amount, so if they had $1 million worth of liability coverage before, they can have $500,000 now? Plus a defense amount, which is outside. How come that doesn't work?
Well, the question that comes to mind is what is the cost of defense? Now, that is a subjective question. A policy could be, but let's suppose that we issued a policy and instead of having $1 million policy, which includes the cost of defense, we suddenly decided to write a policy in which we had a $750,000 limit and a $250,000 defense cost limit. We still have, now what has happened in this particular place, the underwriter still has its limit, but who is to say whether the $250,000 is enough for defense?
Of course, the insurance company is not going to do that, because then you're limiting your, basically it's your tail on the line to begin with, and your client's being sued. And if you limit your defense cost, right, you're going to be limiting your ability to protect your own interest. Is that correct?
That is true.
Appreciate your testimony.
Are there other questions? Excuse me, Council and I are actually. Let me let the committee in on what Council and I are doing, because I think it might have to do with the information that we've just received. I didn't realize, first I hadn't looked at the statute that was being changed, and hadn't realized that really this is a fairly narrow niche that's been carved for some difficult to insure groups. I'm still concerned that there's a public policy here with regard to the expectation of a consumer, even if that consumer is a hard to insure group such as a not-for-profit board. That their expectation is that they will be covered, not just their defense costs the greater policy issue still exists, but it looks like the difference that we're making here is whether there is the possibility that the director could approve that kind of a form, given criteria created by the director's office. What council proposes, and what I'd like to ask you, and I guess Mr. Williamson, because is Mr. Burt still here? What I'd like to ask you to consider, maybe council could go over these proposals to you. We're just looking at some possible changes which might find a middle ground. Council, if you could go ahead with this plan. It sounded intriguing to me.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Looking at the current bill here, I was talking with the chair about was keeping the current language in the statute as it is, but going to line 5 where it says a commercial liability and just removing commercial. So it would read a commercial liability insurance form that provides that the cost of defending a claim, et cetera, and then going down and removing the brackets until the form has been filed with or approved by the director and determining whether to approve or disapprove of the form filed under this section, et cetera, and then removing the brackets of the rest of the statute. Thus, for all liability insurance, the way insurance policies, the way I read it, you would not be able to deduct costs, or you'd not be able to put that on a form until the director had approved that form. So it would make all liability insurance policies treated the same way as commercial liability policies are treated now.
Mr. Williamson, ask for your input on this as well. We're not in work session, although I was planning on going into work session very shortly after conclusion of testimony, and there are no more witnesses. Does these be acceptable?
Can you read through that once more?
Sure. Do you have a copy of the bill, sir?
Yes.
Suggesting that we remove all the brackets in the bill.
Okay.
Put a bracket around commercial, and then put a bracket around the word and.
I think you need to take out commercial on line 10 as
sure,
well.
Sure, that's correct.
Madam Chair, it's certainly better than not having the bill pass at all. It's some protection. At present, we're concerned not so much about the policies that are written in Oregon now, but we're concerned about a trend where automobile policies and many more policies will be written this way, and anything that would help to inhibit that would be valuable. Consumers, when they buy a $100,000 policy, think they have $100,000 worth of insurance, not $100,000 less whatever it happens to cost to defend them in that case. So this would at least get some information to them and some protection for them.
Madam Chair.
John, do you want to come up and become an active participant in this discussion? The body language is coming through loud.
Madam Chairman, I have been involved in the sale of insurance as an insurance agent and broker for a long time. And familiar with, first of all, what goes on in the insurance sale, and secondly, what happens to an insurance agent or broker who doesn't sell a product in the correct manner, they themselves find themselves sued. And my experience is that a policy which has a restriction, such as defense being part of the limit, is very expressly pointed out to the purchaser of that insurance form. I understand the question is that there is a concern that an automobile policy may have this put over on the mass public with no explanation. Our concern, and I understand that, and if we could probably get to something of that nature, maybe the surplus lines people would not have as much problem with it. Our real problem is this, that there is a very narrow marketplace for a lot of commercial liability policies. And to put a restriction into the Oregon code that just says you can't do it on the basis you're going to do so, underwriters at Lloyd's, as an example, would just hoot a little bit harder and go somewhere else. They don't need to sell business in Oregon. They're going to do it on their basis. And the type of people that buy from them are knowledgeable. They know what they are getting. And so these types of restrictions, to make it absolutely illegal would be very, very difficult. The law, I mean, the insurance commissioner at the present time has the right to...
I appreciate that. May I just ask if the bill is acceptable to you as the respective amendments by council have amended? I understand that it isn't as ideal as tabling the bill. But if it's going to remove the objection, I think the committee would like to know that.
I'm not sure that it would. I'm not sure that the underwriters, particularly in the surplus lines field, who do not file policies. They do not file policies. I'm not sure, Madam Chairman, that they would still accept it in those narrow fields.
Although currently any policy which is written by a surplus line association member, which had the cost of defending a claim included in the limits of liability, would have to be filed.
It has to be filed through the Surplus Lines Association to the Department of Insurance. That is correct.
So there are no providers who don't file currently who provide.
They file policies. That is correct.
Perhaps I'm just getting more confused by all this, but
they do not have to be approved. They have to be filed, but they do not approve.
Maybe he's answering the question I had is, in other than commercial insurance, the existing law only deals with commercial liability insurance.
That's correct.
For other types of insurance, is the cost of defending clause available in those policies? Is it even put in it?
In the consumer, in the personal lines, the homeowners and the individual auto, those policies are sold with cost of defense in addition to the limits.
Is it possible for an insurer to write the cost of defending of the claim into the policy as it is in commercial?
It is possible, and they would have to file that with the insurance commissioner, and the insurance commissioner would have to approve that form.
But this section wouldn't apply, though, to the consumer policy. This section only deals with commercial.
As it is currently written, it is with commercial. As if you deleted the commercial and said any policy, then...
Yes.
Or you could do it conversely. You could go the other way and say a personal lines insurance policy could not take place until such time.
Okay, but I guess my question is, in personal lines or the consumer policies, there's nothing to prohibit or there's nothing to require the director approve or even pass on a form that includes the defendant. There is?
Representative Edmondson, for the record, I'm Jack Monroe, representing the American Insurance Association. I think the answer to your question is that there is no specific statutory provision now that reads like this existing provision, which deals with commercial liability insurance. However, as it would relate to personal lines, those forms are filed with the commissioner's office. As a matter of course, they do not approve those forms or policies if they include the cost of defense within the
May I ask the question?
You'd have to ask them exactly what the statutory authority is that they might rely on. Really, they rely on the other powers and whatnot that they have to affect that end.
Thank you. That is the answer.
This question is to any one of you that can answer it. Are we then trying to correct a problem that does not currently exist?
I would say the problem doesn't exist in any great degree in Oregon. It's something we're trying to head off before it gets here. We expect that it will, starting in California, and we expect that it will be here.
This is another California virus?
Nipped in the bud, yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, did you ever get an answer on whether the amendments were acceptable or not?
Madam Chair.
It's late. Did I get an answer on that question?
Madam Chair, could I address that question?
Yes.
My name is John Powell. I represent State Farm Insurance Company and North Pacific Insurance Company.
I would like to be able to get an answer directly from the clients concerning that amendment. I think in terms of practical effect, it's as it has been pointed out to the committee, we cannot use any forms of insurance without getting them approved by the division. And currently, you have to file a fee when you change a form, submit the form, and they have a section on rates and forms in the insurance division, and the people were here, but apparently had to leave. So they would be a resource that I would think you would want to hear from. And secondly, we could get back to you before your next meeting, I would think, in terms of the acceptability of that language.
Great. I appreciate that. Let me kind of put the cap on the discussion here because it's late. We've all been here for a long time. We'll schedule this for a short public hearing and a work session on March 1st. And if you would get back to your people with the language of the amendment, the committee will strive between now and